If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
Welcome to Daddy vs. Doctor. Here are your hosts, pediatrician Dr. Scott Cohen and comedian Sebastian Maniscalco.
We are with Rich Eisen, known you for 5+ years.
At least.
Been on your show plenty.
I feel like I've known you for a long time. Yeah. I feel like I grew up with people like you, me. Sebastian.
About,
I really do.
How about Scott?
Does he look familiar? No, I feel like I went to summer camp.
Right, yeah. That's what we did growing up in Maryland.
I went to school with Sebastian and went to summer camp with you. That's the way I feel. I don't know if that's a tell or a window.
I think it's a tell.
Okay.
Yeah. Because ask him how he feels about summer camp.
Listen, that's
he doesn't get it.
Let's jump.
I want to right into camp.
Yeah.
I never went to camp.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
No friends. No football. No baseball. No soccer camp. It was camp, but it was like I went for a few hours. I came home. Are your kids sleeping?
Oh yeah.
At camp.
They sleep away. They're in Maine.
Okay.
Everybody go.
Wisconsin and Maine are big from LA.
They're big. Yeah. My wife's from the New England area.
Okay. Whereabouts?
In the, you know, Boston proper, okay, and another spot.
Got it.
A hamlet about half an hour out of town. So here's my summer camp experience. I'm a New York Jewish person. New York Jew. Are you?
A Maryland Jew.
Okay. Very good.
Yes. Exactly.
So we went to the same camp. Catskills. Yeah.
Okay.
Was the first location, Camp Lokanda.
Okay.
And then Trails End Camp in beautiful Beach Lake, Pennsylvania.
Oh.
And my parents were both New York City public school educators, which means they were the people who would staff the camp.
Okay.
Because camps usually have a lot of educators because they have the summer off. So my summer camp experience was going to a sleepaway camp that my parents were at.
Oh, wow.
See, wow.
That ain't bad.
No, that's not good. Sucked.
That's horrible.
For the kid.
Yeah. Of course.
I think for the parent, having the kid within eyeshot at camp.
Yes.
Would be something.
Well, the issue for me was my dad was the group leader. He was in charge of the group of bunks for the age group that I was in.
Yeah.
And so when they wanted to defy authority, when the kids would defy authority, when my bunk eight turned into Lord of the Flies in Glen Spey, New York, where Camp Lokanda was located, I would be the one going like, "Hey, let's all not do this." I would be the stick in the mud because
dad's over there.
The authority they're defying is my dad.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should curse on this show or not.
It's fine.
It's fine. But he plays in my office.
He was my dad. You know, like so. And then visiting day would happen and parents would come. And for me, it would be like, what's special about this day? Like, I don't know. And all the other kids would be losing their minds. And then when visiting day, I've now learned visiting day from the visiting parents' point of view, which is I've now done for all three of my kids. Visiting day at a sleepaway camp goes something like this. Awesome when you see them. Great moment. Pictures all around. Reunions happening. It's great. Then the next hour, you're seeing them in their element, seeing how they're growing as people, meeting their friends, hearing from the counselors how they're adjusting. That's great. Then you have lunch, and that's great. And then doom starts to set into the mindset of your child that you, as your parent, is about to leave them again. And the rest of the afternoon turns to absolute shit until the time when it's time to go. And it's like Sophie's Choice, literally,
wow.
You know, and it's I might be overdramatic about it.
No, I think it's like stages of grief.
Because this does not involve Nazis, but you know, it is something that is really intense. But when I was a kid in camp, all the kids would be crying that their parents left in the bunk, and then all of a sudden the tears would stop and all eyes would just go to me and go, your parents are still here, aren't they? And I would, so
see,
that's
my
whole tale of woe about myself.
This is so true, because I jokingly said to my daughter, but I played it up for a couple of days, I said, I'm going to be a doctor at your camp this summer.
Oh, okay.
And she goes, no. And I go, yeah, Aubrey, this is going to be great. Daddy gets to do all the activities that you get to do, and I'll be there. And, you won't see me, but I'll be watching you. And she was really upset, and I let it go for a couple of days. And then I said, no, that's not really happening.
Yeah.
No, they don't want us here. See, he's always said he doesn't like summer camp because he feels that the bad seeds impose their will on the good seeds. But I look at it differently, and I think you feel the same. It's a growing experience for the kids. They come actually back much more mature.
Yeah.
The time away is a good time. And as a parent, what you learn, the best part about summer camp is they're at summer camp.
That is true. I have reacquainted myself with my wife over the last six weeks, and in the same way that visiting day impending doom sets in on the kids when they realize the parents are leaving. Our two boys returning this Saturday. Love them.
Yeah.
Love them very much. I think I have dad of the year qualities, all due respect to everyone here, but we're having sense of doom, like our time together is the curtain's about to close. Yes. And but it's all good, because it is true that the kids in summer camp definitely learn coping on their own, as opposed to leaning on you as a parent to help them cope with their problems. Like, hey, you are on your own. And also in this 21st century, which we didn't have to deal with as well when we're kids, these summer camps are tech-free.
They're off
their phones. They're off their iPads. They are literally putting pen to paper and writing
letter. Are you getting the letters?
Interestingly enough, they write them down, and then they're emailed to us.
Oh, wait, see, that's a better process. So we email, and they print them out and give it to the kids.
And put it on their
bed.
But
they have to write back to us, and they make them do a certain number. And I get one saying, Dad, I really don't feel like writing. Just know I'm having a good time. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and my son is about to turn 15. He's at a teen camp for the first time. And they let them email every now and then. And then they let them email just unfettered access, because the older teens can handle it, but my son, you know, he's a little tech nutty kid, and he's like emailing us 3-4 times a day, and we're like, hey, listen, we're only going to respond to one, so send us one. And then about 2 weeks later, he calls my wife on her cell, and we're like, you know, was it, did you get arrested? This is your one phone call? Like, what is going on? And he goes, actually, I found out we can make calls. And we're like, that's terrible. That's not a good thing at all. And at the end of the conversation, he says to my wife, talk to you tomorrow. And she goes, no, you won't.
Right.
She goes, you will not call us again. We will see you, you know, we will see you when we see you. And then the next day, our nanny tells us, you know, hey, guess who called me?
Yeah.
He called her.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, you know, what's next? Like strangers and local radio stations? what's he doing? Like, wait a minute. This is not what it's about.
I found my person, because you are so out of your element right now.
I'm stunned.
You have no clue. Because I bet he understands. When we used to write our parents, because no kid wants to write their parents, they would make stationery where you check the boxes. Do you remember that?
Yeah, sure.
I'm doing good, great, whatever. Check, and you just do it just to send it to your parents.
I created a box where, you know, like, send help, get my parents out of here.
This is nostalgic to me. You know? I love this.
But, so my parents are like, you know, my dad who passed away a few years ago, but my mom will always say, you know, we terrorized you with the camp thing. Is that what you're saying? And I'm like, you didn't terrorize me, but, you know, I got through it. But there is an aspect, again, to sleep away where they're, you know, how old are your kids? Your kids are young,
six,
right?
6 and 4.
Yeah, at some point, like, they're going to end up having to cope in their own shit themselves, as opposed to calling you up or your wife. And summer camp's a great way to figure that out.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Yeah, well, the only camp I went to was called Camp Hastings, and it was two nights, and it was awful, just
where
terrible.
This
was in Chicago. Yeah. It was sponsored by the school. There was no 6 weeks, no communication, none of that stuff. Italian people need to be in constant contact every day of the week, all right? You can't just send your kids and not know what he's doing for 7 days, but... I'll probably succumb to the camp idea.
100%.
When, you know, my wife went to camp. Everybody went to camp. I just can't relate.
Where'd she go to camp?
I don't know. She went to...
she's Jewish.
She's Jewish too. Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
All right.
There's a common theme.
We're getting somewhere.
I feel like it's a Jewish oriented thing. Camp.
Yeah.
No.
A little bit. No, because my wife is Roman Catholic, actually, Western Pennsylvania, yeah. And she's like him. She goes, I don't understand summer camp. I didn't know anybody went to summer camp. I never went. And the whole time I'm like, this is what you look forward to all year. So as my kids got older, I'm like, they should go. And she's like, why should they go? And it wasn't until they were actually in their teens that they
went. I saw a story. I think the New York Times just did a story on how summer camp was like a crucial sociological movement amongst American Jews who emigrated to the country.
Oh, really?
Yeah, something not to get too deep into that.
Up.
So,
no, hey,
again, I don't know. That's why, again, I grew up with you and I went to camp with you. That's pretty much it, you know, for me.
So how are you navigating? You're talking about technology and what have you.
Yeah.
Kids are at camp. They don't really have access to it.
It's great.
What are you doing at home about iPhone, iPad? When is a good age to get one? Have you and your wife struggled with this?
Yes, we struggled with it because we all didn't plan until giving our son a phone till the eighth grade, and a whole bunch of parents signed a document, wait until eighth, and so many of them just coughed up the phone in the sixth grade. And so we would get the, you know, son coming home saying, you know, it's not fair. But also the thing that's really jacked up is my 15-year-old hit the fifth grade during the pandemic. Mm. And so the pandemic changed so much for these kids in terms of the phone and the iPad being the methods of communicating with the outside world.
Of socialization. Yeah.
And also with their friends. Yeah. So if you're taking away phone time, you're taking away the gateway to communicating. And I find when we went to school, the conversation about when you got to school was about what happened yesterday in school or in an after school program, right? Yeah. Now it seems like the conversation with these kids when they get to school is about what bullshit they were texting each other at midnight the night before. Mm-hmm. And if my son's not on that, which he's not, we take the phone is removed 8:30, 9 o'clock, which may be punitive to a kid who's about to turn 15, but that's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And but there's stuff that's going on between the hours of 9 and midnight.
That's like
that is
54.
The first order of business at school the next day. And if you're out of that mix, you're like, what happened? And you feel disjointed and feel removed. And if you're in the know, well, then it's now advancing something. And these kids don't know how to communicate in text. And I also find that leads to the fact that they can't communicate face-to-face as well because of these devices. So we're dealing with that the best we can. And the pandemic really jacked up these kids of these ages, you know, and things are going to advance to the point where, you know, when your kids get older, not to freak you out or anything, but I mean, advances are going to be through the roof with AI and all this crazy shit going on. I just remember sitting around, I play in a Thursday night poker game here in LA. I've been doing it every week since I moved here 20 years ago. And like 12 years ago, we're sitting at the poker table. It was about 10 years ago. And a friend of mine had his laptop to his left. And I was giving him shit. I'm like, we're not interesting enough for you? The cards aren't tumbling your way that you're on your laptop? And he's like, no, my son just broke up with his girlfriend and they both just changed their Facebook status to single. And I'm monitoring the chatter amongst all of his friends at the school. I remember thinking, oh my God, like that's what I got coming in the future here. And that's what you have to do as a parent now is monitor that and absolutely look at their texts 1,000,000%, yeah. See what they're saying to each other, what they're saying, how is your child responding in a world where one misused word or one misconstrued word or one dopey, stupid use of the word by your kid could change their entire social structure and view of the world. It's
I mean, that's what we talk to teenagers now. I mean, it's unfortunate. There's really no second chances. I mean, think of all the dumb things we did as kids and in college. Imagine doing all those things and somebody was videotaping you doing all mm-hmm. them. Now everybody's watching everything. You know, we joke, we say, you know, you're going to be on a group chat 100% of the time. There's always at least one dumb on the group chat and everybody blurts out the name of the person. And I go, yeah. And the problem is if they're doing something inappropriate or talking negatively about other people, guess what happens? Everybody in the group now gets in trouble. Whether you said something or not. It's not fair, but that's how things work now.
I try to tell my kids this story. When I first got to SportsCenter in 1996, and all I wanted to do, because I was in stand-up in college, again, what you do for a living and how good you are at it, I have nothing but the ultimate respect for what you do and how you do it. I mean it. I'm not just saying it because I'm here on your pod and in your spot. But I loved the environment, nothing's tougher than trying to make a live audience laugh. And so
I don't like med school or anything, but that's okay. I'm talking about shit
I've done.
I just give him hell.
Oh my God. I mean, okay.
You felt left out.
It's all good.
I know. I get a little.
There's no I in
doctor. Wow, man.
So at any rate, I got there and everything I said was a joke. It was a gag. I try to make everything a joke and a gag. And sometimes the news and information would suffer. I wasn't delivering it because I was so excited to be on SportsCenter and making jokes. And that was my default. And I just remember finally getting to go out on an assignment outside of Connecticut, outside of the bubble of the SportsCenter studio. And my first assignment out was in the old Boston Garden. Covering the Celtics hosting the visiting Seattle Sonics, who at the time were the Gary Payton and Sean Kemp and Detlef Schrempf and Sam Perkins 60-win team on a roll. And so that's why they sent me there to cover him. And as an aside, I sat underneath a basket in a press row seat next to a longtime scout of the Celtics, Al Lewis, the grandpa from the Munsters, moonlit as a diehard NBA scout. I couldn't believe I'm like sitting next to Grandpa Munster, who had a great comedy club in Staten Island, by the way. Anyway, long story short, the reason I'm telling the story is I remember going into the locker room afterwards, and I remember going in there, and this was kind of a surly team. They had just whipped up on the Celtics by 15, and I thought they'd come in all, you know, hyped. You know, my vision was like the White Shadow, and the players would come in and start singing karaoke, you know, a barbershop quartet and have a good time. But they were just like pros and like all surly, and their faces were like staring at everybody. And I thought to myself, as they all stared a hole through me, like, oh, shit, what did I say on the air? Over the last year, did I talk shit about Payton or Kemp or any of these guys? Did I make fun of them? Did one have an air ball and a highlight? Because that's what I would do. I would So I said to myself, I hate this feeling, and I the rest of my career will only say anything into a microphone that I'm comfortable saying to somebody's face. The microphone should not be something that removes myself from civility or anything that I would say anybody to someone's face. And I tell my kids this story, whether they listen to it or not, that you should text the same way. like before you hit send, anything you put into text, yeah. would you be comfortable saying it to the face of the person you're sending it to? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is no, you're not sending it.
Yep.
And I just think there's too many kids that just have the toughness. Like people, you call them Twitter tough. You know, mm-hmm. when they're on Twitter, they'll talk shit to you behind their avatar that's not their face and behind a bio where they talk about their religiousness but say the worst things to you.
Right.
I mean, that's the way a lot of kids are talking to each other. So we take the devices away. My wife and I were just talking about when they come back from camp, do we let them have their iPads and on any day that they're not at school, you know, in the days leading up to school, and we're going to kind of bring down the curtain there. We definitely put time limits on them. So when the hour is up, it comes down, and then you'll just, like, my wife and I will just be somewhere in the house, and we'll secure, like, damn it, you know? And we're just waiting for the run, like, come up, like, I'm on the phone with my friend. I need 15 more minutes. And it's just like, oh, my God. Yeah. Like, what is happening to my beautiful child?
A mochi moment from Tara, who writes, for years, all my doctor said was eat less and move more, which never worked. But you know what does? The simple eating tips from my nutritionist at Mochi. And after losing over 30 pounds, I can say you're not just another GLP-1 source. You're a life source. Thanks, Tara. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Tara is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
A Mochi moment from Sadie, who writes, I'm not crying, you're crying. This is what I said during my first appointment with my physician at Mochi, because I didn't have to convince him I needed a GLP-1. He understood, and I felt supported, not judged. I came for the weight loss and stayed for the empathy. Thanks, Sadie. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Sadie is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
In that story, you bring up Boston Garden. I just want to take a small departure.
Please.
Never been to the old garden. Was it as bad as people say it was?
Bad in terms of what?
No air conditioning, old, no amenities.
Yeah, yeah. It was towards the end, you know, if you weren't part of the Celtic pride, a dump, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I had just, I believe the United Center had just been built, and I had been in that. And I remember when the United Center got built in Chicago, they said that it was so big that you could fit the entirety of Chicago Stadium within the confines of the arena.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, and you know, but you looked out there in the parquet floor and you know, the overhang and all of that. It was, you know, you couldn't help but just feel the gremlins in the building, and it was just great. The locker room was ancient too. Yeah, awful.
Yeah.
Compared to today.
Yeah. I mean, today seems extremely vast and you're not really on top of the game, but the Boston Garden, those Chicago Stadium seemed like people were just like falling onto the floor.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I went to a Cowboys Redskins game, as they were known, back in, when was it? Right after I graduated college in 1991. And I went on the season tickets, a family that had their tickets for Washington for decades. And it was two rows from the front of the upper deck in the end zone. And whenever anybody caught a ball in the back of the end zone, we had to get up and lean over to see the back of the end zone. Like, so you could only see from just, again, just two rows, and there's the end of the upper deck.
Yeah.
And you could only see like the first two of the 10 yards of the end zone.
Wow.
And, you know, you would feel the shaking. RFK would shake when they scored a touchdown, and it was wild. And then the same seats, they had two rows from the top of the upper deck, two rows from the front of the top of the upper deck in the new stadium, which is FedEx Field. And it felt like you were watching the game from Delaware. Like, it was totally, like, you weren't there. Yeah, it's totally removed. So, yeah, buildings are different these days,
for
sure.
Do any of your kids play sports?
My oldest retired at the age of 5.
Okay.
Yes. His, we hung his T-ball pants up in the rafters. He just really wasn't into it.
Yeah.
And my youngest son is totally into it. Same womb, brothers. They have totally different likes and dislikes. You know, my youngest son tried to, like, he loved anything round. He tried to dribble a marble once. You know what I mean? Like, he's totally into it.
Yeah.
And so we're having two totally vastly different awesome experiences with our boys. And our daughter's kind of into it, and she's just into everything. She's awesome.
I love it. So being around sports and all these amazing athletes, how do you feel about the kids playing sport? Were you trying to push it? Or were you saying, ah, whatever happens, happens?
Well, we pushed them to start, you know, and then let them follow their desires. Again, my oldest son just really never liked it. He got glasses early on as a kid, so playing soccer kind of freaked him out a little bit, because you know, as a little kid, you look down at your feet to see the ball hit your feet, and so with glasses, like, you couldn't glance down. He literally had to put his head into the action, and I think that kind of flipped him out a little bit. My wife found, God bless her, she found these goggles. You know, like these Kurt Rambis-looking things, with that the bottoms were prescription, so he could actually look down. But even that didn't really remedy the soccer problem. In baseball, first time kid pitched and hit him in the hand, he was just toast. And it was just like, you know what? He's not into it. Let's find stuff that he is into and let him find that and grow. And he loves so many different aspects of the arts and everything else. He's just not that into sports. He's not into watching it either. I showed him the Super Bowl. We had it, the Super Bowl between the Ravens and the Niners, the Har Bowl, on DVR. I don't know why we DVR'd it, but we did. And instead of him watching the game over and over again, he loved the halftime, which was at the time Beyonce. And
that was a big one.
And it was, you know, he loved that. He also loved watching the blackout, you know, 'cause remember the lights went out in the third quarter of that one? Just watch. So he's not as into that, but my youngest son totally is. And, you know, I find myself happily leaning on my sports press box, no cheering in the press box credentials, where you just swallow your emotions, because when you watch your kid play youth sports and see the way other kids act and other parents act, you know, the game can truly be on and afoot, and I don't want to be that person. So I do a lot of pacing, and I don't say a lot, you know, watching my son play Little League right now.
Anybody in your family express doing what you do for a living? Is that something that you...
My youngest son has said that out loud a little bit. But again, we don't really, you know, my wife is in the business too. And she spent years doing sideline work on ABC and ESPN and TNT. And you know, she's hosting my show for me Friday when I'm going to the Hall of Fame. So they've got two parents who communicate and are not shy to a light or a camera, but we don't really foist that on them at all. You know, we'll just, they've come to the show every now and then. I did put my oldest on the air a couple of times, and he was great at it, but if he wants to do it, great. If not, it's all good.
But they have to go to University of Michigan?
That would be great.
Yeah.
It's funny. Michael Irvin once told me that he told his child, there's three things you cannot change in your life. You cannot change who your family is, you cannot change what your faith is, and you cannot change that you will go to the University of Miami, is what he told his kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like the same line with my kids. Did you go to Michigan or what?
No, but all my good friends growing up, everybody, I feel like I'm an honorary Michigan fan, because my college didn't have very many sports, so
where'd
I root for Cornell. So
I went to summer college in Cornell.
Did you really?
What year?
Because I went to summer college there, and that's why I wanted to go there.
I think, what year was it? I bet you it was 1985. I just turned 54.
All right, I'm going to be 50, so not too far away.
Okay, yeah.
But that's a funny story. I visited Michigan because all my buddies were going to Michigan in dead of winter, one of these minus 20 wind chill days, and said, why would anybody go here? It's so cold. Visited Cornell during the summer and all these waterfalls and gorges. Beautiful. Was like, can't be much different than DC where I grew up. And then choose 11 months later of winter, I'm like, I'm in a colder place.
Yeah, it's pretty friggin' cold there. Cold. And it's the hills there are very, very steep. Very steep. Steep. I remember that.
See, he knows all the places.
Yeah, I literally feel left out.
Wait, let's no, bring no, in. How no, can we
I
bring mean, in?
I feel like it started with
Do you eat pasta?
And then it died.
Of course I eat pasta. My God. We have a good friend in common. Good old Dom. We know Dom.
Dom said, I was supposed to say, do you know Dom?
Of course I do.
Yeah.
Have you been to Staten Island's Finest, the cheese shop of Beverly Hills?
Have you been to the new one?
I have not been to the new one.
It's fabulous.
So we did a podcast out of the new one.
Did you really?
Yeah, in the basement.
So you're a good friend, man.
Yeah.
You're good people.
Well, he fed us for... No, he charged us. What am I talking about?
I left him a message before we got on here, and I said, listen, Dom, you said that he knows who you are, and
it's
asked him.
Fact.
And he doesn't know who you are, and I was just naming names, and it went really bad.
I legitimately had his meatballs last night, and that is not a metaphor for anything. Legitimately, the turkey meatballs that you unfreeze and you throw in there, I mean, they're fantastic.
Being that I have younger kids than you.
Yes, sir.
What have you learned, or what do you pass along as far as advice to younger parents? For example, are you the disciplinarian in the... they're just walking all over you? And then
I'd like to think, you know, there's a grayer area between not being the lead disciplinarian in the house and then a total...
We're the same person. It's amazing.
Listen, does it come from...
Pushover, I mean...
Was your father a disciplinarian?
My dad... was not. I think my mom was the strong disciplinarian in the house as well. So it does mimic, I guess, the way of my upbringing, but I am definitely somebody who will put a foot down, you know. But in my house, I would counsel to you as the parent of a 6 and a 4-year-old, and I know you probably hear this a million times, but really soak in these ages, no matter how friggin' crazy it can get and how obstinate they can be and how nuts it is and how, you know, the young aspects of these kids. And you might look at somebody who's got a 15 and a 12 and a 10 and be like, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, is there a corner of a desk or whatever. You have to worry about that stuff. But right now, like, it's a great age, man. Yeah. These are great ages. And, you know, get on the floor with them, do that sort of shit before, you know, they get older and it's different.
Have you seen him walk? His hip?
You got hip problems?
I got sciatic pain. It's like, you know.
You still have that? You were telling me I told you I have this little Israeli guy who will walk on your back and it'll be fucking brilliant. You got to get this guy. I can give you his number. He's unbelievable. I'm telling you, he's unreal.
The fact that he's Israeli... I'm just going to go to him. Yeah. Just the fact that he's Israeli.
And he went to summer camp.
I like how Israeli guy. If you said I got a guy that does this stuff, I wouldn't have taken you up on
it. But the fact that he is Israeli
is a whole different thing. I feel like he could walk on my back and then show me how to hook up a stereo system.
He can do that. He can absolutely do that. No question about it. And he will just, it'll be done. Well, I told you that the last time.
I'm telling you. The sciatic pain has gone away.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. I have other issues, but at least that pain is gone. But getting back to the kids their age, have you ever thought in your parenting life, what am I doing covering the Boston Celtics, whatever, when I maybe should be at home?
Oh, of course. I try not to miss the big things, but the Hall of Fame weekend, for instance, the Pro Football Hall of Fame weekend is always on the weekend of my wife's birthday and my oldest son's birthday. And I miss it every single year. And as much as I am very fortunate to do what I do for a living, you know, you stare out at I-77, you know, in a beautiful Canton, Ohio, and you're like, you know, I should be home.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. But you're doing what you're doing for a living to provide best you can. Also provide an example of a work ethic for your kids that I think will definitely be noticed. I'm not on the road as much anymore, which is great.
Mm.
I'm a fort holder during the NFL season and doing my show every day. I'm in LA as much as I've ever been, and I do love that. But yeah, I do worry about that from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, I often talk to people who have, you know, full-blown careers, particularly fathers, not that mothers don't, but just I'm around a lot of fathers, whether it be golfing or whatnot, and mm-hmm. how they kind of deal with the rigors of work and equally providing the attention that the kids deserve at home.
Yes.
And I'm sitting here thinking sometimes, I'm going to be playing in Funner, California tonight, mm-hmm. but why?
Right.
You know, like,
right. And at some point you will make that part of your career that, you know, you have reached a certain point where, you know, do the gigs here in LA, Vegas, whatever, where you can pop back and forth or whatever. But I'm sure you do love being in these spots.
No,
and,
I do.
And, you know, doing your thing for people who love you and consume your craft, and you're going to them, which I think is an incredible connection that you can make with a fan. That's kind of why I like to do my radio show every day, is I get, you know, I give out a phone number. You want to call and talk to me? Let's do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a connectivity I love, and I do miss the live give and take. I've done some live versions of my show at Super Bowls with a live audience. Mm-hmm. I just love it. I love getting out there and warming up the crowd. I just love that sort of aspect of it. But at some point, you'll have to make a choice. Like, you know, maybe you cut back here or cut back there. But it's funny. One of my poker buddies told me, you know, when I had my first kid, you're going to love it, but they screw it all up. I'm like, what do you mean they screw it all up? That sort of thing. When you're on the road, you know, and they... God bless them. You know, they're awesome. You want to be there for them. Are you missing anything? Are you putting pressure on your spouse by not being there? That she's handling it. And then comes this aspect that I've noticed in the very rare times that I'm home alone. That's happened to me this summer when my kids were out and my wife was out east, you know, in between the two camp visiting days, doing some things out there with our third son who had an intermission in his camp. Don't get me started. But anyway, so she was out and I'm home alone. And I'm in a quiet house. And the first night, it was one of the most glorious things of all time where I'm on my own schedule. And then I get to do things like leave a fork in the sink by itself.
Yeah. All night.
I take a glass, I fill it up, I drink. I take it whatever room I want. I'll leave it there. I'll leave it there overnight, and I will do that. And I'm thinking to myself, I think to myself, like, this is fast and loose. Like, what the hell has happened to me in my world? And then it's now time to eat. And I'm like, what am I going to do? I always plan eating around when the kids are eating.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Like, so it's up to me to decide when I eat and what I want to eat. Like, what's happened to me? You know, like, what in the world is occurring in my life where suddenly after a day of this freedom, I'm right, like, it's too quiet.
Yeah.
Like, where are the kids? Like, my universe is totally off.
No, it gets boring. This literally just happened. Same thing. One was at Sleepaway, and my wife was with the other one back east, and I had 1 week.
Yeah.
And the first day I'm driving home from work, I'm like, oh, it's 6 o'clock. I feel like sushi. I stopped at a sushi restaurant, sat at the bar by myself.
Oh my God.
And then I said, oh, I'm going to go see a movie. Nobody wants to see the new Indiana Jones. I'll just go. I sat in Indiana Jones by myself. I think it was the only one in the theater. And then by the second day, I'm like,
loser.
All right, now I got nothing. I got nothing.
I was going to say creep. You said loser. But that's right, okay.
A mochi moment from Mark, who writes, I just want to thank you for making GLP-1s affordable. What would have been over $1,000 a month is just $99 a month with Mochi. Money shouldn't be a barrier to healthy weight. 3 months in, and I have smaller jeans and a bigger wallet. You're the best. Thanks, Mark. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Mark is a Mochi member compensated for his story.
A Mochi moment from Sadie, who writes, I'm not crying, you're crying. This is what I said during my first appointment with my physician at Mochi, because I didn't have to convince him I needed a GLP-1. He understood, and I felt supported, not judged. I came for the weight loss and stayed for the empathy. Thanks, Sadie. I'm Myra Amit, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Sadie is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
Oh, God.
I know. That's what I'm like. They screw it up. Like, back in the day, I got time for myself. Back when I was a bachelor, no kids, like, I knew exactly what I was going to do. I'll eat when I want, whatever the hell I want. And I'm, you know, I'll do whatever I want. I'll go out or whatever. Now I'm like, where do I find my, you know, my compass? Like, where is it? So, yeah, like, when the kids are coming home, it's gonna fill up the house and it'll, you know, I miss it when I'm gone. And then when they're gone, I miss it. And, you know, you can't win for losing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's great. It's great. Wouldn't change it for the world. Yeah. You know?
So you have this run you do in a suit.
Yes, sir.
Right? You've been doing it since, I think, 05.
Yeah.
I was actually looking at your times. And 05.
Yes, sir.
You actually did better recently
yes.
than you did
yes.
in 05.
Correct.
I never really... It's one of these things you see on the TV,
yeah.
you run it in a suit,
yeah.
right? And there he goes doing the 40 in a
yeah,
suit.
Yeah.
I never thought to ask, though,
yeah.
how did this start?
Okay, I got the story for you. Like everything in this business that we do, Sebastian, great things are born out of sheer fucking boredom, okay? Totally in the television business, waiting around to do something. So it's the 2005 Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, 2 hours till the show begins, and I'm sitting in my suit in the second section, the second tier of the old RCA Dome, home of the Indianapolis Colts, in one of those domes like the Carrier Dome where air conditioning keeps the roof open. It keeps it up. So long story short, I'm sitting next to my analyst on that night's show, Terrell Davis, future Hall of Famer. And we're just sitting there, like barely staying awake. And you hear the hum of the lights and you hear the air conditioning. You're ready to go to sleep. And I just turned to TD because I'd look down at the field and I see the 40-yard dash line. I'm like, how fast do you think I can run it? And he goes, what do you mean? I'm like, how fast do you think I can run the 40? And he goes, right now? I'm like, right now, in my suit, in my dress shoes, the whole thing. And he just laughed. And I cursed at him and I went down. And had no idea that the truck, which I thought was on a break, had people in the truck. And that the person who was, you know, using the Steadicam was actually recording me. And I ran the 40-yard dash in my suit. And then that night on that show that we finally got around to doing it, they surprised me with it. Put it on NFL Network. And I ran 6.77 seconds, which is a terrible time. Because I'd never run a 40 before. And I'm in my suit and whatever. And in my dress shoes. And they showed it. And the next day when we're shooting it, Mike Holmgren of the Seahawks was like, did I see you running a 40-yard dash in a suit last night? And I'm like, well, actually, here it is. And they showed it to him. And then Joe Gibbs came by. And then suddenly people were requesting to see it. So I did that. Thought nothing of it. Show up the next year in the RCA Dome, and Mike Holmgren's there. And he goes, so you gonna run it again this year? I'm like, no. And he goes, you gotta beat your time, no? And I'm like, actually, I do. You're right. Like, he's actually coaching me up, getting that competitive spirit going. So I did it again, and then I did it again, and I did it again. And soon there was, when we moved to the new dome, which is not really new anymore, Lucas Oil, they now had the ability to take 40-yard dashes from that facility and overlay them over previous run ones. So this technology existed. It's called Simulcam. Mm-hmm. And what that wound up doing is they wound up simulcamming my run with actual runs from that year's combine with actual athletes. And it added a very funny slapstick element that put this in a whole new level. Otherwise, I think I would have jumped the shark. And so it was funny of watching, you know, like RG3 be out of the screen before I was on the 1 yard line, or giving me a 5 yard head start on the slowest guy at the combine and watch him run through me by the 30-yard line and beat me. And so it was really funny, and it kept going. And then about 7 years ago, we decided to add a charitable element to it. And now it's taken on a whole different life of its own, where I've run it here in Los Angeles due to the pandemic. I did it in SoFi Stadium with actual NFL legends like Terrell Davis and Rod Woodson. RG3 did. It's funny. I was simulcam with RG3 years ago, and then he showed up last year at the Rose Bowl and ran a 4.44.
Really?
Yeah. Like, people were even talking about maybe he should come back.
In a suit?
No, I'm the only moron who does it in a suit, because that's
right,
my...
He's on camera now. Wearing
well,
suit, right?
And so, so long story short, the reason why I am faster...
Yeah.
Is I'm now wearing actual running cleats. I'm wearing a suit, but I took off the lace-up Crocs, you know, because I'm like going to blow an Achilles doing this thing in those dress shoes. So that made me faster, and I'm actually a little bit better at it.
Last time?
5.94.
Do you know when that was?
About 4 years ago.
Okay, are you practicing?
No, and it drives my wife nuts. I don't do shit.
Just do one run a year?
One run a year, and she's like, "What? Like, wouldn't it be great if you actually trained for it?" I'm like, "Define great, you know? Like, what do you mean great?" But she's trying to push me to, like, maybe I could show men of a certain age.
Right. What's the slowest guy at the combine? That's like, 300 pound lineup.
Like, if I actually, the problem for me is, you know, in the past, the run was in late February, coming off the NFL season, not really a health nut. You know, when you're on TV all the time. But I need to find the discipline. And this year, I think, is going to have to be it, because Tom Brady has now taken an interest. He's a fellow Michigan man, saying, you know, like, he came on my show a couple of months ago and berated me and wants to put me on the TB12 system a few weeks in advance. And I can't let him down. So I might actually train for it this year.
I mean, he may be the one guy you could be faster than.
That's possible.
Right?
That's possible. It's entirely possible. But probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not. But yeah, it's been great. And of course, you know, the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital element was introduced just when I was having my my third and final child, my daughter. And my youngest son was 3, and my oldest son, who's now 15, was about 6, 5. So it was about 9 years ago when we started talking about it. And just, you know, as you know, I mean, what they do at St. Jude, there's nothing more remarkable than getting a sick kid better, and then parents don't see a bill. Like, there, but for the grace of God, go any of us. So it kind of dovetails between, you know, growing as a parent and being able to try and affect change in a positive way through my idiotic run born out of complete boredom.
That's funny. It's like something like that, you know, I thought it was like, oh, this is planned. He's doing the 40. It just comes out of the fact that he's almost taking a nap.
Correct.
In a dome.
That's right.
And next thing you know, it's the hottest run on TV.
It's pretty, it's amazing. And we've raised a ton of money, and I just loved it. I wasn't going to do it the second year if I hadn't run into Mike Holmgren saying, you know, you got to beat your, like, and that's the way he said it. Matter of fact, like a coach, like, you got to beat your time. Like, what are you doing? You know, like, not thinking.
We got to go out in your backyard. What could you run it in?
Me? Yeah. I was at a beach yesterday, and I saw a guy running, and I told my wife, I go, look at this guy. It's like a gazelle. It was beautiful, just bouncing off the sand. And I said, let me go see.
Yeah.
Videotape how I look when I run.
How'd that work?
And I look, when I'm running now, I look like the sand is hot. And I'm just trying to get back to where I was laying down. And in a suit.
Yeah.
All these times, have you ever ripped something, button fly off?
Oh, yeah. I've ripped the following. I've ripped socks. I've ripped the pants inseam. I've ripped the coat and my groin.
Wow.
Yeah. Damn near tore it off the bone 1 year. It's so stupid
what
I do.
Do you stretch for this?
No.
You just go on.
I mean, I do a little stretching beforehand, but, you know, that's not pretty either. I mean, none of it's pretty.
The stretching is terrible.
I mean, even just the way we look when we're stretching. I mean, it's
not great.
It's
we're talking about middle-aged terrible. Men.
No, I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you.
Pulling groins,
running after 50.
This is it. It's a bad choice.
This is it.
But I'm doing it. I'm doing it.
A mochi moment from Mark, who writes, I just want to thank you for making GLP-1s affordable. What would have been over $1,000 a month is just $99 a month with Mochi. Money shouldn't be a barrier to healthy weight. 3 months in, and I have smaller jeans and a bigger wallet. You're the best. Thanks, Mark. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Mark is a Mochi member compensated for his story.
Getting back to being a father.
Yes, sir.
With the family. I know they go to camp, but do you guys still do family vacations?
Yeah.
Because I often see your Instagram and maybe they're not pictured, but I think you and your wife love to go to Italy and
all the time.
And whatnot. Do you do like wife trip and then family trip? And how important is taking a family vacation?
Family vacations are crucial. I mean, we just went to Israel with the kids. My mother-in-law has a tradition that she started with my brother-in-law, that she takes the kids to Israel when the middle child, because my brother-in-law has three kids, is about to be bar mitzvahed or bat mitzvahed. So she did it for my brother-in-law's family, and now she did it for us. And it was incredible, you know. It's a challenge, obviously, but we've been overseas with them, and just so that they can learn a different language or see that there's more to life than just that. It's imperative if you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I did it. And then with the summer camp stuff, it's when, you know, my wife and I could steal away. Like last year for her milestone birthday, we went to Italy. Because that country is the greatest on the planet, just in terms of hospitality, food, culture, history, friendliness to Americans. It's the language, and plus my wife is fluent in Italian.
Wow. Yeah,
like great. She speaks it like English.
She taught herself or she took it?
Well, she's just smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, so she took it. Yeah. And so it's great. I just sit back and just let her ask all the questions.
I've never seen, though, the amount of intake of food on a vacation that you do.
I get so much crap from my guys on my show that I like to Instagram out food.
No,
I like to share. I like to share when a dish in Italy hits the table, there is a certain art to it.
Mm-hmm.
It does look beautiful.
Yeah.
And I like to, you know, I have a style, plate. Glass of wine here or there in the foreground, and shoot it.
Oh, you set it up.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
There's an art to
it. He doesn't set up 40-yard dashes and suits, but the Italian meal
portrait style. Oh, yeah, and it's just as soon as it hits the table, you know, before I dig in, I got to put this here, that there, and I take a shot of it, and then I pop it on Instagram, and I put my phone away. And then people, you know, think that I'm showing off. Hey, that's on you. That's a YP, you know what I mean? That's not an MP. I do eat a lot on vacation, but I remarkably, because it's in Italy and the way that they prepare their food, I don't gain any weight when I go over there. Zero.
Really?
Yeah. My nickname is the maintainer.
Wow.
On vacation. The maintainer is in Italy.
That's impressive.
That's it.
I love it.
Now growing up.
Yeah.
Did you grow up in the same type of economic environment that your kids are living?
No.
Okay. Is there a point that you go, man, I wish my kids would have known what it was like to grow up like me?
Yeah.
And an example I give is when we went to Chicago Stadium, my father took me to see Jordan.
Yeah.
But we were in the third balcony obstructed view.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I was just happy to be there because I didn't know any other closer seat.
Sure.
I was just there in the stadium.
Yeah.
And now, maybe you get to sit closer, and now you have like perspective. Oh, I was here, and now I'm here. Do you ever wish that your kids have these experiences that you might have had so you could appreciate?
Well, I think it's up to us to provide for them the manner in which we're able to provide for them, but let them know how fortunate they are to be doing that. And that's the trick. That's the gambit. That is the crucial gambit. Please and thank you. Say please and thank you all the time. Look people in the eye when you shake them in the hand, when they shake their hand. Look them in the eye when you're talking to them, and understand that whatever we're able to provide for you is something that we're happy to do, because we didn't have it as children, and we're fortunate to be able to provide it as long as we can. So that's the way I look at it.
But no matter what you say,
yeah,
there's no experience like sitting in the third deck and fearing for your life up there, right? You can't you can't even explain it.
You can get away with all sorts of shit, but you can say that down on the court, sure. No, but there is a certain charm, and obviously growing up there, the blue seats is what they were called in Madison Square Garden, all the way in the top. I sat in the blue seats quite a bit. Sat into the second to last row of the stadium for the Jets AFC Championship game in 1997 when they went to Denver. My Wesley Walker game jersey from my camp days, just to bring it all full circle. It fit still. And I was on SportsCenter at the time. People were like, why is a SportsCenter guy sitting in the second to the top row of the stadium? But I don't mind doing it if I have to, you know, if that's the way it is to get in. And, you know, but otherwise, you know, we're seat geeking from row C in. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the target if we can do that.
So I don't.
It's a possibility. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's out of the realm. But that's the idea. I do like providing for them as best I can.
Yeah.
Letting them know it's out of the ordinary.
Yeah. I think that's the key.
We're lucky enough to do it.
Is there been a sporting event that you were ever in attendance at going, I can't even believe I'm witnessing this?
Oh, yes.
What sticks out?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no doubt about it. I was the first host of ESPN Radio's coverage of Major League Baseball. So ESPN Radio had just been born a couple years before I'd gotten to ESPN. Their first major rights acquisition was Major League Baseball. So they would have Sunday Night Baseball, the All-Star Game, playoffs, the World Series. So I was the in-studio host to say, hey, welcome to this, welcome to that. But on occasion, we would go to the World Series games and the All-Star games. So I was the pregame and postgame host for this stuff. So my pregame at the 1999 All-Star Game in Fenway Park was to stand behind home plate and be quiet so people would hear the proceedings, but then also fill in the blanks and on the dead spots of the introduction of the All-Century team, which was unbelievable. Name anybody who was alive in 1999 who is an all-time great baseball player, and they were there, with the exception, I believe, of Pete Rose. And the biggest moment was when all the players, they came out, the All-Century team came out from the garage in center field in Fenway Park, and they all strolled out as one and took positions between first and second and third base. They lined up like that and came out the garage, kind of like coming out of the corn of Field of Dreams. And just to hammer that point home, the MC was Kevin Costner standing on the pitcher's mound.
Wow.
That he then seeded way to when all the current All-Stars were lined up from home plate to the corner bases to create this constellation of stars, past and present. And then they got Ted Williams on a golf cart to throw the first pitch to Carlton Fisk, and I'm standing behind home plate, like five feet away, like describing, well, here's the pitch, you know, as I believe it was Ken Griffey Jr. and Tony Gwynn keeping, you know, Ted Williams upright to throw the pitch. And every All-Star converged on the pitcher's mound and wanted to talk to Ted Williams, or Koufax wanted to talk to Randy Johnson, and name, you know, connective tissue from the current stars to the old stars. And I had to describe what was going on, because it went on so long, the public address announcer had to basically tell everyone to break it up. We got to play the game. And then I had to get off the field. And I was right there, man.
Wow.
I mean, it was right there. And thank goodness it was my job to say nothing, because what are you going to add? I'll never forget it.
That's amazing.
I'll never forget that.
Just the talent. Plus, you're a New York guy, so it's like...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, but, you know, I got to cover World Series when the Yankees were winning them all, and that was unbelievable, too. I was very fortunate, and then left to go start NFL Network in 03 and completely flipped the script. I had nothing to do with football at ESPN.
Oh, wow.
And then just moved out here in 03. We're celebrating our 20th year on NFL Network this
Congrats.
Fall.
Congrats.
Thanks.
That's great.
I had more hair when I started. Yeah. And then the kids just polished the rest of it off. Yeah, they polished it off.
Well, I got to thank you for coming on.
Yeah,
it was so nice to talk to you, get your take on parenting and your career. I know I've been on your show before in the past, but I like that I got to get to know you a lot more.
Thanks,
here in this environment.
I appreciate that.
And you've inspired me to put a suit on.
Excellent.
and run a 40.
I think you should.
And go to summer camp.
Here's what we're doing. Yeah. Sebastian, and you've got till next April. I'm doing it every year now here in Los Angeles at the Rose Bowl. Here's what you do. You run it on that day with me. You'll be part of the run. Bring your wife, bring your kids. They run around the Rose Bowl. It's the most awesome day. There's kids from St. Jude there. It's fun. I'll give you the date. You're invited. Now you do it.
Do we race side by side, or do we just do tough for time?
It's just tough for time.
Okay.
That's it.
All right.
We don't need to be that competitive.
I don't, yeah, but believe me, if you were next to me, I'd definitely pull a calf.
Oh, I thought you say a fast one, like suddenly stick your arm.
No, I'd be crippled.
Like a little Mike Tomlin on the sidelines, one of those things. But no, please do. And I'm, you know, anytime you need me on any pod, and when this crazy ass infernal strike is over, you come back.
Yeah.
You know,
I will
come back anytime. Let's talk. So
thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, nice to meet you.
I feel like I went again. Like, I feel like I'm back in Camp Loconda.
We're finally talking about something I know something about. Summer camp.
Bunk 9, when I learned that Tom Seaver got traded, you know, like those days. I feel like I'm back in those days.
Feels good.
The opinions expressed in this program are not intended as professional medical advice, as a diagnosis, as a treatment protocol, or as a substitute for professional medical advice from your physician. Please consider your own medical history and consult with your own physician for your specific healthcare and/or medical needs, and about your concerns for yourself and your family.